Hi, this is CJ Wilson for the Green Bay Packers, and you listen to Railbird Central.
Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Kirvu. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. Free agency is officially slowed down. I hope everybody yesterday had a chance to watch the Wisconsin Badgers on their run to the Final Four. That's right, I said the Final Four. Wisconsin's going that far, minimum, if not the national championship game, if not the national champions. You notice free agency is slowed down when I'm talking basketball on this show. It has in the past 2 days since we last talked on Wednesday's episode. Not a whole lot of news in the world of the Green Bay Packers. I think two of the most notable items, and they really aren't all that big, the contract details of James Starks' deal came out yesterday, were published by multiple outlets. Also, we learned that the Packers visited with Missouri and openly gay defensive lineman Michael Sam. We'll talk more about that later. But let's talk about James Starks and his impact on the Packers' backfield and their future in 2014. We learned yesterday that James Starks signed a deal worth a little north of $3 million. So the if you want to know exactly how much James Starks is going to make, and again, this assumes he gets all his bonuses, which may or may not happen, every single one of them. But James Starks got a deal making $3.165626 million over the next two seasons. He's roughly making a little more than $1.5 million per year. This is not an exorbitant contract. It's very team-friendly. I think it's what James Starks about deserves. Heading into free agency, I thought James Starks would be, if you told me the one player I thought was guaranteed to leave in free agency, you know, the Packers had something like 17 unrestricted free agents. I guess that number came down after Sam Shields signed his extension. But regardless, you know, 17 unrestricted free agents. You know, I remember thinking before the start of free agency, who do I think is almost a sure bet that's gone? And I thought it would be James Starks because I thought, A, the Packers already have a lot of depth in their backfield. I don't think they're going to want to spend a whole lot more money there. I thought, you know, maybe if James Starks leaves, he's the type of player who could get a compensatory draft choice if he leaves. All those things I thought kind of contributed, and I thought, you know, somewhere in the NFL, somebody's going to be looking for at least a backup, and I suppose the Packers were as well. They really view, obviously, James Starks as kind of being a complement to Eddie Lacy, and with Eddie Lacy being entrenched, I thought, you know, here's the spot where James Starks leaves. Didn't work out that way. I'm fine with it. I just thought James Starks would leave. I'm fine with him being back. I thought he had the best season of his career, arguably, last year. Maybe not from a total yardage standpoint, but certainly, you know, in terms of his yards per carry, when he averaged 5.5 yards per carry, that's awesome. I mean, that's fantastic. Like we said, it only came with about 80 some carries. I think if I saw this come across my Twitter feed yesterday or the day before, maybe when Starks signed, that based on NFL running backs who had at least 80 carries or more in the entire NFL, James Starks led in average yards per carry. So there you go. Pretty awesome. for James Starks. He got a signing bonus of $750,000. Pardon me, just south of that. His signing bonus was $725,000 for James Starks. So that's the guaranteed portion of his deal that he makes no matter what. When James Starks signed his contract, he got $725,000, which actually pales in comparison to lots of signing bonuses you see across the NFL, but still not insignificant money for most people. His base salaries are a very manageable $750,000 this year, jumps up to $1.175 million in 2015. You kind of see that, you know, the Packers hopefully anticipating that the salary cap grows. And you know, even though James Starks' salary is more next year, the salary cap will also rise. So really maybe not that big a deal there. And has per-game roster bonuses totaling $182,000. So James Starks gets paid roughly $11,000 every game he's active. So if he happens to be hurt, he happens to be injured, the Packers don't pay that, and he gets a $75,000 workout bonus. So that means if James Starks is in Green Bay during OTAs, the portion of the off season that is not mandatory, but if he chooses to stay in Green Bay, he gets $75,000, which the Packers, you know, like to do that, and I think most teams do, if they're working out in Green Bay in the off season, and most players do. Rarely do they not do that. The Packers have done such a good job of that over the years in structuring, you know, bonuses and things like that, that they pretty much get 95% participation rate during the off season. We're talking the April, May time frame when they could choose to, you know, work out at their hometowns or whatever. And sometimes players do. Last year, Sam Shields didn't spend a whole lot of time working out in Green Bay, but that was partially due to because, you know, he wanted the money last year as a restricted free agent and really didn't get it. He had to wait a year and prove himself. And you know, I think things turned out well for all parties. But yeah, Sam Shields last year didn't work out in Green Bay. This year he will. James Starks has the incentive to work out in Green Bay, and it's very likely he will as well. And I want to talk about what James Starks means to the Packers and the Packers backfield. I think some people are starting to see, okay, James Starks got signed. He got $3 million over 2 years. John Kuhn is still on the unrestricted free agent market. Does this signal the end of John Kuhn in Green Bay? And that's kind of what little bit of discussion I wanted to have here on Railbird Central. I do not think that is necessarily the case. I think John Kuhn is still, will be welcomed back by the Green Bay Packers. In kind of the selfish Packer fan mode that I'm in, I'm kind of glad John Kuhn has gone out in free agency and has not, to my knowledge, to any published knowledge that's out there, received any interest on the free agent market. In fact, I just saw yesterday, I think Bruce Miller of the San Francisco 49ers signed a contract with them, you know, kind of just one less place that a team may need a fullback. So the spots out there are dwindling. So I'm glad to see that, because I don't think, you know, fullbacks are worth all that much. I don't think the Packers should have to pay that much for John Kuhn. Not that they have to pay him the minimum salary. I think over the years, what he's done for the Packers, he's deserves a little bit over the minimum salary, just as a thanks to what he's done in the past, if nothing else. But so I don't think, you know, the Packers signing James Starks plus Kuhn's still on the market necessarily means he won't be back. Am I ruling out that possibility entirely? No. As we can see, the Packers have become less and less reliant upon their fullbacks over the years. You can remember back during the Super Bowl season, remember when the Packers were the anomaly of the NFL and they kept three fullbacks on the roster when Kuhn was there, Corey Hall was there, Quinn Johnson was there, and everybody was like, three fullbacks? Are you kidding me? And they actually did that for two straight seasons. Was kind of an odd situation. But, you know, the Packers have gotten away from that entirely. John Kuhn has been the only fullback on the roster for, I think, the past three seasons. They've gone from three to one. You actually saw at the beginning of last season, 2013, John Kuhn was not playing a whole lot. There were games when they really didn't use a fullback at all, and the Packers could go in that direction. But I think there's so many things John Kuhn offers, from pass protection to leadership to being that, you know, a single back in the backfield that can carry the football. If need be, I think everybody is kind of sick of seeing John Kuhn dives up the middle, especially in critical situations. I don't mind seeing John Kuhn getting the football on first and goal from the 1 yard line. If you want to give it to him, then fine. By all means, give it to him. If you want to run it in any 4 minute drill situation when you're trying to run time off the clock and you have the lead, fine, give it to John Kuhn. I think people just get sick of seeing him on third and one. Is that the best option? John Kuhn on a dive up the middle that, you know, it really seems to have a 50-50 shot of working. And I think fans out there are thinking there's a whole lot better ways to convert a third down rather than giving the ball to John Kuhn, whether it's giving it to Eddie Lacy, who seems a whole lot more talented, or actually just putting the ball in the hands of Aaron Rodgers and hope he completes a pass. There seems to be better options there. Doesn't mean I don't like John Kuhn. I just don't like him getting the football a whole lot. I love, you know, what he did. What he did blocking for Eddie Lacy, in fact, this past year seems to be such a big improvement over seasons past. And I don't know if it's just a factor of Eddie Lacy being so much better. But, you know, I thought John Kuhn did his job rather well. Of course, everybody knows about the pass protection, the block on Julius Peppers to win the NFC North and qualify for the playoffs in the season finale. All those things, he's been a reliable receiver out of the backfield, has decent hands for a fullback, does fine there. You know, all those things, I think John Kuhn, there's room for him in the Packers offensive backfield. I just hope it's not for much. I hope it's not for a long-term contract. I think the Packers could almost go year to year from here on out with John Kuhn. If they signed him to a one-year deal, that might be fine. They could start looking for somebody younger, or, you know, start looking into a situation where they don't perhaps use a fullback at all. I don't know whether they want to go down that road where you're not, don't have the option of one at all, but, who knows what will happen here as time goes on. You know, I think the addition of James Starks, and not really the addition, the pretty much the status quo. I mean, his contract expired and he was on the market for like a week, but, James Starks makes this one of the best backfields in the NFL. You've got Starks. You've got, of course, Lacy, the reigning NFL Offensive Player of the Year. On top of that, you've got the two jitterbug types. You've got Jonathan Franklin and DeJuan Harris. And those guys, you know, have both been injured. They've both proven themselves in spurts. You know, there's been a game or two here and there where they break out, but it hasn't been over a long period of time. I think people are wondering, Can they keep both Dewan Harris and Jonathan Franklin on the team? You know, assuming they're healthy, you almost got to think Lacy Starks. Those guys are like, you know, not just penciled in; they're penned in on the 53-man roster. But you know, who are the Packers going to keep on top of that? Are they going to keep both Franklin and Harris? I'm not sure they do. Maybe they do, but I'm not willing to go out on a limb and say that right now. I think that the Packers may keep only three halfbacks on the roster. And again, I mean, injuries can play a part in this in a heartbeat, and you never know what can happen. But assuming everybody's healthy, I think Harris and Franklin are fighting for perhaps one job, but you know, leaving the door open at least to all eventualities, and John Kuhn can play a part in this and well as well. So that's kind of your Packers backfield outlook here, as I see it right now here in March of 2014. Things will change over time. They'll probably add another running back late in the draft or undrafted. I can't imagine the Packers are going to address running back at all, and unless if they happen to actually draft a fullback, maybe, perhaps. I'm not holding out much hope for that either, but I think it's perhaps maybe even a better chance than a running back outside of, say, the seventh round or something like that. But, yeah, that's what the running back position looks like. Let's get to the other topic of the day. Michael Sam reportedly visiting with the Green Bay Packers. Missouri held their pro day yesterday. And Michael Sam, of course, everybody knows the background story by now, comes out as openly gay, would be the first openly gay player in the NFL if indeed he makes a roster. There's so much scuttlebutt on Michael Sam, you know, outside of the, well, it all factors in. You hear rumors, or you hear people speculate, at least wondering out loud, are there NFL teams that would pass on Michael Sam strictly because they don't want the headache of having to deal with the media circus around him? They don't want to have to deal with the issues arise of a player being gay and how he fits into the culture of an NFL locker room. Not to say that any NFL team has come out and specifically stated those things. People are just speculating more or less. But, you know, you could see things like this potentially arise from people who might be bigots, things like that. I certainly don't wish that upon Michael Sam, and I think there's a very few minority of people that do. Regardless, what also factors into this whole Michael Sam situation is that, you know, he got a lot of attention from strictly, we're talking here, a football standpoint, named the SEC's Defensive Player of the Year. The SEC, considered far and wide the best conference in all of football, in college football. And to be the Defensive Player of the Year, boy, he must be pretty good, right? Well, as people are learning, Michael Sam, as he showed at the NFL Combine, not really an elite athlete. He kind of had an underwhelming NFL Combine where, you know, things like his 40-yard dash, his bench press were just kind of average numbers, if not even maybe slightly below average compared to other players at his position. And, you kind of look at that and think, maybe he's just a mid to late round draft choice, which, you know, I think maybe before there was all this attention on him, people thought maybe he might be a high round draft choice. But after they've seen Michael Sam, the athlete, that stock has dropped a little bit. And you know, here he is, you know, mid round prospect at best. We're talking day three. I think still very much, you know, very capable and deserving of being drafted on day three. I kind of do wonder how much Michael Sam's production was a result of being on a very talented, first of all, Missouri defense in general, but also a talented Missouri defensive line. Of course, I think the best player on that defense, on that unit, is Coney Ealy, a guy who could be as high as a first-round draft choice. We're talking late first round here if he does, maybe more of a day two type of guy. But regardless, Coney Ealy, very good player, basically played opposite Michael Sam at the other end position. And where Michael Sam probably projects to being a 3-4 outside linebacker, you know, in the Packers 3-4 scheme, Coney Ealy, I think, is more of the prototypical 5 technique. Some people have argued Coney Ealy could play outside linebacker as well. I think he's more of your 5 technique, and I think he has the measurables, the size, the height, the weight, the length to hold down the fort there at the 5 tech position. Regardless, both productive players in their own rights, but you do wonder, maybe was Michael Sam's production a factor of Coney Ealy opening up things on the other side? People, you know, sliding, maybe they're giving the extra blocker over that way. You know, I don't know. In things that I watched, it didn't seem that teams were game planning more for one than the other or anything like that. But there also was a decent, you know, they had some underclassmen at Missouri on the defensive line who are still there at Missouri that also were productive as well. So being a talented defensive line in general there at Mizzou. Now, Michael Sam, I just watched a little bit of film on him for preparation for this show before we came on air, knowing I'd talk about him a little bit. And, I mean, the Packers certainly putting to the test, are they a 3-4 defense? Are they a 4-3 after signing Julius Peppers here? And I think especially you're going to start to see some, you know, 4 down lineman elements in passing downs, like nickel dime, things like that, guys in the 3-point stance. And maybe that plays into what the Packers are perhaps looking for out of a late round type of guy. You know, they certainly are, even though they start to look like they're okay on the defensive line at outside linebacker here after signing Julius Peppers, re-signing Mike Neal, you know, they're still going to address these, you know, several positions at least late in the draft, even though it may not be a huge need right now. But, you know, maybe that makes sense with Michael Sam being a day three type of guy. At Missouri, I went and watched just before we came on the air here his game against Georgia, in which he had a very good game. Missouri, which was, you know, ranked lower at the time, ends up upsetting a higher ranked Georgia team, and Michael Sam actually had a touchdown in the game. It was just a factor of another player forcing a fumble, and Michael Sam was kind of lucky that he was in the right position at the right time. Still made a good play regardless. So he scores a touchdown, has a sack, has a batted pass, has a good game. Most of his action came from almost exclusively from a 3-point stance. I think I saw 2 or 3 downs maybe where he was in a 2-point stance, kind of played that what you think of as the typical defensive end in a 4-3, always in a 3-point stance, always rushing the passer. Rarely, I didn't see him drop into coverage at all, and that's the worry you have there with Michael Sam, because he was constantly going forward. He was never often moving laterally, moving backwards. Can he fit into a 3-4 system if he's asked to play, you know, outside linebacker in the way, you know, Nick Perry does, in the way Clay Matthews does? Can he drop in space? Can he move around? And that's the worry that you have, especially in light of Michael Sam's average kind of workout at the NFL Combine. Now, yesterday, as you know, I understand it, and I should mention, by the way, and I haven't, and pardon me, This whole thing about the Packers meeting with Michael Sam apparently came from a report on air from ESPN from reporter Shelley Smith. I've seen multiple people cite this. I wasn't watching ESPN at the time that it happened. And so it was simply a live report. Either you saw it or you didn't. But I've seen multiple people cite this, and we, you know, have a small little micro blog item of it at Cheesehead TV. But, you know, getting back here to Sam's workout, reportedly pretty much improved in every aspect, you know, after having the average NFL combine, you know, ran a faster 40, ran these drills faster, I think put up more bench press reps. So everything, you know, that's good. You know, Michael Sam trending in the right direction, bouncing back from a mediocre combine to have a good pro day. There was one little catch, though. Apparently, after his first 40 time, which he improved and ran better, which is great, he apparently did not run a second 40 after tweaking his hamstring. Now, I don't know how the whole pro day went and how it all what order they did things in. Because usually, just based upon things I've seen at the NFL Combine, going to Wisconsin's Pro Day, the 40 is always one of the first things they do. And so they do that, and then, you know, they do other drills later. The vertical jump, the broad jump, the three-cone drill, they do all those later. They do the positional workout drills later. Well, he tweaks his hamstring, but Michael Sam still did other drills, and he still apparently did positional workouts. So he didn't drop out of the workout entirely. He just declined to run that second 40-yard dash. So I don't know. This may not be something that's really all that big. That's really a huge deal. Maybe he just also felt like, well, you know, I had a decent first 40. I feel this little twinge. Why take the chance at making it worse? So maybe that's the case. But anyway, you know, the whole point in all this, discussing it here at Cheesehead TV, Packers apparently showing interest. Of course, I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, you got to take these meeting things with a grain of salt, because the Packers meet with almost every draft eligible player at some point over the course of their college seasons, the NFL Combine, Pro Days. They bring players in for visits. They will meet with almost everyone at some point. So to say the Packers had a meeting with Michael Sam doesn't necessarily show any more interest than any other team. Doesn't mean necessarily the Packers are going to draft him. Although I think he does fit what they do, I think maybe perhaps there's the chance of maybe less distraction in an environment like Green Bay on Michael Sam than there might be in New York, to a very tiny extent, because I think media can find you anywhere in the NFL. But, you know, the Packers showing interest in that they met with him, but, you know, just doing their due diligence, I imagine. A lot of times if they, you know, meet with a guy extensively at a pro day, maybe that means they didn't meet with him extensively at the NFL Combine, where they met with a lot of other prospects. They're just trying to cover all the bases and you know, talk to as many players as possible. So, again, take this with a grain of salt, folks. But saying worth discussing, I think it's always I like the challenge of breaking down Michael Sam a little bit from a football aspect today, when, you know, pretty much all the discussion beforehand, I remember back before the combine when he came out, it was discussion simply of him being gay. Great to break down some X's and O's here. How does he fit in, et cetera, et cetera. So noteworthy on this day, at least I would say. So there you go, folks. It's past 9 o'clock on a Friday morning on Railbird Central here at Cheesehead TV. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us here on the show. We'll let you go. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy your weekends. Enjoy watching basketball. I'm I'm sure everybody is avoiding work as much as possible to watch March Madness and the NCAA basketball tournament. So go enjoy yourselves. Watch all the hoops you can. We'll talk to you next week, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, live on CheeseheadTV.com, live on your Roku player. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Feed the Wolf by Conspirator on Psy Fidelity Records. Go, Pack, go.